My name's Greg. You might know me online as Greg the Greek. Today I'm going to be talking about towards ETH2 developer tooling. Basically, how are you going to go from ETH1 to ETH2, and is it going to work? And what are we going to do about it? So, do I not get a preview here? Okay. So quickly, who's ChainSafe? Who's ChainSafe? We're a R&D protocol shop out of Toronto, about 26 people, mainly in Toronto and a little bit distributed. And we're working on an ETH2 client called Lodestar. And just who I am, I'm one of the co-founders of VP Engineering. You can find me, Greg the Greek, just about on everything. So what is Lodestar? So Lodestar is a TypeScript and assembly script, basically ETH2 ecosystem. We're building just about everything that we can in there. Rationale, a lot of, when it comes to interacting with blockchains, 90% of the time you're using JavaScript. So we're going to need the support there. And basically some of our focuses are on light clients, the beacon. Our main focuses are on a beacon chain implementation, light client implementation, which Cayman had a really good talk on yesterday and highly advise checking out the videos and slides. And as well as developer tooling, because naturally, as I said, we're going to have to interact somehow, and websites mainly do it through JavaScript. My agenda is really simple today. We're going to look at where we are now, and then how we're going to try and, do a migration, some sort of a migration path that makes sense, so that, everybody working really hard on their tool sets don't have to rewrite everything, because that would suck, and a lot of wasted time. So basically, where are we right now? This slide was so hard to make, by the way. There's way too many teams out there, and if I didn't add your stuff, I'm sorry. This is just what I typically interact with. We have a whole vast type of tooling that exists right now. A lot of it, we have providers like Web3.js, Ether's.js, development related stuff like Truffle, Ganache, SolC.js, wallets that do a lot of the hard work for everybody, and they don't really realize what they're doing in behind, such as Wallet Connect, MetaMask, Frame, so many more. Really helpful debugging tools like EVM Lab, and some you might not know what it is, but it's helps you really dive deep into seeing what's going on within the EVM while you're executing your smart contracts. And then obviously we got really great websites that help you build smart contracts like Play and Remix that are integral. And one thing to note with just about all of these things I've listed here, I'm pretty sure they all use JavaScript right now. And it's very deeply nested in them for how they make their connections and actually interact with Ethereum. So moving forward, with Ethereum 2.0, there's one big thing that we have to note, and it's that, our APIs are not at all equivalent. The compatibility is next to nothing, which means that everything we've just listed here would not work right out of the gate. It would actually take quite a lot of an overhaul, borderline a rewrite, if we didn't do something to help better support a transitioning period. So that's what I've been focusing on personally. So I've been spending a lot of time personally on, how can we make this a smoother transition for teams who are building quality tools that are used every day. I think Ethers alone has 13,000 downloads on the little used packages on the GitHub downloads thing, which is that's a lot of people depending on, one small piece of software within the larger context of the ecosystem. So to highlight the example, we have a block in, ETH1, and we don't really have a one-to-one equivalent because we have two types of blocks in ETH2. So that's a problem. We also have shards. Shards don't exist, so your ETH1, I don't know what you'd do there, what would Ethers do when you say get block? Where do you go? There's two blocks, and there's also many shards. So, and then we have execution environments. I don't even want to touch that, and I won't be touching that today because, that's something else. But to highlight my point is, there's so many discrepancies that the APIs will never line up, and they won't. But there's some things we can do, and there's some clever things we can do. So something I've been thinking about as an interim solution, and obviously this is not great. The more I've been talking with a lot of teams, especially Truffle has been they're happy to do a proper baked in solution. But something interim that we could do, with Ether is what we typically do is you pass in, the testnet or the network you want to use. And what we can actually do is we can create about like an adapter, sort of like that sits right on the outside and wraps all the requests. And basically the idea behind that is something that we did at Chainsafe with something called Ethermint from the Cosmos ecosystem, where we made the EVM work on top of Tendermint. But naturally, it's kind of a similar situation. They don't line up. But we had to make sure that all the developer tooling like worked right out of the gate so that it was like playing in Ethereum. Because, otherwise, why would you use it? So what we did was we basically added this layer in front that every time an API request came into the EVM, or in this case, it would be like when it hits the Beacon Chain or AL, whatever's there, we're basically looking at it and then translating to whatever we think makes the most sense from that side. So we can do that with the Beacon Chain, right, and with this. So chances are you have a contract. You're saying, hey, I want to look up this contract. You have to get routed to a shard, because that's where your contract's going to be living, and you're going to have to do it that way. So we can just take like a generic request from the standard ETH1 API and like rewrap it and pop it back out. That works. It's not great. That would mean every client team would have to go and adopt this, like a interface sitting in front of their current, whatever we end up making the ETH2 API, whether it's JSON RPC, whatever. It does the job. It's not great. We could also integrate directly into the providers. We could directly put it into Ethers. Again, not the optimal solution. Well, this is something we're thinking about. Ideally, we're going to have to do some sort of a ground-up rewrite on our providers. And if we can do it from the provider's perspective, then we actually save ourselves. As long as the providers maintain the same API format, and then we're just doing a lot of magic in behind, we actually won't have to rewrite a lot of our dev tooling, and like dev teams can continue to operate as they did before. Naturally, it'd be nice to get some like native ETH2 tooling, but to help ease the transition over, this is something along this line will probably have to be the best case we can do. Otherwise, we just won't have anything ready by the time ETH2 launches. And there's no point in spending resources doing twice. So that's my little provider show. And I'm happy to talk about this a lot more after. Something else that's kind of interesting, and this is funny, it's like, hey, maybe we can solve it after 30 years, but we won't, is the intersection of like clients and developer tooling and how we can actually potentially make smarter developers. And by this, I mean like more on the front end, the DApp side, because right now, we spend a lot of time, the ways we do things, we do a lot of polling, for instance. A lot of developers like go and poll the chain like a million times over and a million times over. And then if they're hitting Infura, then you're bombarding Infura with like thousands of requests. It's not a great solution. But moving forward, because, light clients are becoming our first class citizens in ETH2, which means we actually can use this as like a powerful tool to help us, not exhaust resources and actually utilize only what we need to, serve our dApps or serve whatever the application is moving forward. So I've naively put, we're still working on this, and it's kind of like, we're trying to think of a new way to like reshape the way we interact with the chain. I don't want to go too deep on light clients, but so basically the idea is you subscribe to a shard that you want or a subset of shards that you want, and you only get the relevant data that you need. Very lightly put. And something that we can do here is the current model and flow in ETH1 is that, the website connects to the provider then hits a full node, the full node has to like basically index the whole thing to find what exact information you need and then returns it. Very slow, very cumbersome. With light clients, what we can do is we actually can put the burden back on the website or the client or the browser itself. And this is kind of interesting because what we can do is we can do one of two things. We can say, when you go onto a website, we can look for, now I know a lot of people are going to be like, oh, you shouldn't be injecting like Web3 into the browser, but we're not going to talk about that right now. Let's just make a naive assumption. So is there like an ETH2 object in the browser? If there is, we can assume that there's some sort of a provider already existing and there's like potentially a plugin like MetaMask. In that case, we can, MetaMask in this instance would be hosting a light client actually within the plugin. This allows then the website to go and say, hey, I need you to subscribe to this shard for me and then start persisting and maintaining the data. And then, once the data is requested, the website uses it as it's going. While that's happening, we can actually cache, you know, that shard data into a cookie, local storage, or even if it's a plugin, the plugin state. And alternatively, if we make our providers smart, we can then actually have the website itself, if the user doesn't have a plugin, we can have the website itself actually spin up a Lite client. And this is because we will be able to do this simply because we've got languages, you know, compiling to WASM, but also Lodestar's like whole goal is to have a Lite client that runs in the browser, that's native to the browser and works. So with that, we can actually kind of like exploit the browser to its fullest capabilities so that the burden doesn't go on like a centralized service like Infura. And don't get me wrong, like Infura is amazing. You know, we have a lot to thank for them, but let's try and take the burden away from them if we can. And a scheme something like this would definitely help solve a lot of those issues and could potentially change the way we develop and serve data. End of my talk. Let's chat afterwards if you are a tooling team, because like there's a lot to kind of discuss here. It's still pretty early, but there's things that we need to start talking about now. I know there's a lot of pain points in the current API and the current way ETH1 works in regards to like the JSON RPC API. And we have an opportunity to kind of learn from our mistakes, reshape it from the beginning, and decide and basically, you know, make it as optimal as we can right out of the gate. So thank you. And you can contact me here.